She isn't doing much else. She's just there, in the ocean with nothing and no one around her. I suck in a breath, and in the same instant, the girl turns toward the ship. It seems impossible, but in that moment, I swear she looks straight at me, through me. What's she doing? I turn to Kai. She isn't doing anything, I say. She's just there. But when I turn to look back, she isn't. And in her place, there's a deadly stillness. Kai, I yell, rushing to the edge of the ship. Full speed ahead, circle around and prepare the buoy. Wake the rest of the crew and have them at the ready. It could be a trap.
Captain, don't be reckless, shouts Torek. It's probably a trick, Madrid agrees.
I ignore them and head forward, but Kai puts a gloved hand on my shoulder, holding me back. Elian, stop. There could be sirens in the water. My jaw tightens. I'm not letting anyone else die because of a damned siren. Kai squares his shoulders. Then let me go instead. Madrid pauses for a moment and then, slower than usual, hoists her gun over her shoulder. I place my hand on top of Kai's. His gesture has nothing to do with heroism, because he wants to save the drowning girl, and everything to do with loyalty. Because what he really wants is to save me. But if there's one thing in the world that I don't need, it's saving. I've risked my life enough times to know it's charmed. Don't let me drown, I say. And then, I jump. The water feels like nails. A terrific legion of stabbing iron pierces my flesh until my breath catches in my chest and gets stuck there. I can't imagine what the Pagies waters will feel like in comparison. I can't imagine their country and their mountain and my fingers remaining on my hands as I climb it. I swim deeper and let my head spin. It's dark enough beneath the water that the farther I swim, the more I doubt I'll reach the surface again. But in the distance, even buried beneath the ocean, I can hear the rumble of the sod. I can feel the water being pushed and sliced as my ship chases after me. And then, I see her, sinking to the bottom of the ocean, her eyes closed and her arms spread out like wings. A naked girl with hair to her elbows. I swim toward her for an eternity, closer and deeper until it seems like she might hit the shingle before I get to her. When my hands finally clamp around her waist, I find myself wincing at how cold she is. Colder than the ocean. She's heavier than I expect. A sinking stone, dead weight. And no matter how roughly I haul her up, how my hands dig into her stomach and my arms crush around her ribs, she doesn't stir. I worry that I'm too late. But I can't bear the thought of leaving her to the sharks and monsters. With an explosion of breath, I burst through the water surface. The sod is close, and within seconds a buoy is tossed into the ocean beside me. I slide it over the girl, wrapping her limp wrist around the rope so the crew can pull her in first. It's an odd sight to see a lifeless body heaved onto the ship. Her skin is so pale against the dark wood of the sod, one wrist tied to the buoy and the other hanging helplessly below. When my crew finally hauls me up, I don't stop to catch my breath before rushing over. I spit salt water onto the deck and fall to my knees beside her, willing her to move. It's too soon, too early in our journey to have a body on our hands. And as much as I like to think that I've grown accustomed to death, I've also never seen a dead woman before. At least, not one who wasn't half monster. I look at the unconscious girl and wonder where she came from. There are no ships in the distance and no land on the horizon. It's as though she appeared from nowhere, born from the ocean itself. I unbutton my dripping shirt and slide it over the girl's naked body like a blanket. The sudden movement seems to jolt her. And with a gasping breath, her eyes shoot open. They're as blue as Sakura's lips. She rolls to her stomach and coughs up the ocean, heaving until there seems to be no more water left in her. When she turns to me, the first thing I notice are her freckles, shaped like stars. Constellations dotted across her face like the ones I name while the rest of my crew sleeps. Her hair sticks to her cheeks, a deep, dark red, muted and so close to brown. She looks young, younger than me, maybe. And inexplicably, when she reaches for me, I allow myself to be pulled into her. She bites her lip hard. It's cracked and furiously pale, just like her skin. There's something about the action and how wild it looks on her. Something about her ocean eyes and the way she strokes my collar softly. Something familiar and hypnotic. She whispers something. A single, guttural word that sounds harsh against her lips. I can't make sense of it, but whatever it is, it makes me dizzy. I lean in closer and place a hand on her wrist. I don't understand. She sits up swaying and grips my collar more tightly. Then louder, she says it again. Guoroni. She spits it like a weapon and her face twists. A sudden change from the innocent girl to something far crueler, almost murderous. I recoil, but for once I'm not quick enough. The girl raises a shaking hand and brings it down across my cheek, hard. I fall back. Cop! Torek reaches for me. I dismiss his hand and stare at the girl. She's smirking, a ghost of satisfaction painted on her pale, pale lips before her eyes flutter closed and her head hits the deck. I rub the edge of my jaw. Kai, I don't take my eyes off the ocean girl. Get the rope.
15. Lyra. When I wake, I'm bound to a railing. Golden rope is looped around one of my wrists, lassoing it to the wooden barrier that overlooks the ship's deck. I taste bile that keeps on burning. And I'm cold, which is the most unnatural feeling in the world because I've spent a lifetime marveling in ice. Now, the cold makes me numb and tinges my skin blue. I ache for warmth, and the faint glow of the sun on my face feels like ecstasy. I bite my lip, feeling newly blunt teeth against my skin. With a shuddering breath, I look down and see legs. Sickly, pale things that are crossed awkwardly beneath me, dotted by bruises, some in big patches, others like tiny fingerprints. And feet, too, with toes pink from the cold. My fins are gone. My mother has damned me. I want to die. Oh, good. You're awake. I drag my head from the railing to see a man staring down at me. A man who is also a prince, whose heart I once had within reach. He's watching me with curious eyes, black hair still wet on the ends, dripping onto perfectly dry clothes. Beside him is a man larger than any I've seen, with skin almost as black as the ship itself. He stands beside the prince, hand on the hilt of a long sword that hangs from a ribbon on his waistcoat. And two more. A brown-skinned girl with tattoos spread up her arms and on the sides of her cheeks, wearing large gold earrings and a suspicious glance. Standing defensively beside her is a sharp-jawed boy who taps his finger against a knife in his belt. On the deck below, so many more glare up at me. I saw their faces, moments before the world went dark. Did the prince save me from drowning? The thought makes me furious. I open my mouth to tell him that he had no right to touch me, or that he should have let me drown in the ocean I call home just to spite my mother, just because she deserved it. Let my death be a lesson to her. Instead, I say, "You're a good swimmer," in my best Midasin.
"You're not,"
he retorts. He looks amused and not at all frightened by the deadly creature before him, which means that he's either an idiot or he doesn't know who I am. Possibly both, though I don't think the prince would waste time binding me to a railing if he planned to kill me. I wonder how different my mother's spell has made me appear, for him not to recognize me. I look at the others. They watch the prince expectantly, waiting for his orders and his verdict. They want to know what he plans to do with me, and I can sense how anxious they are as my identity remains a mystery. They like strangers even less than I do, and staring into each of their grimy faces, I know they'll toss me overboard if their prince commands it. I look to the prince and try to find the right words in Midasin. What little I've spoken of the language tastes odd on my tongue, its vowels twisting together all too slowly. It tastes as it sounds, like warmth and gold. My voice isn't my own when I speak it. My accent is far too sharp to loop the words, and so my tongue hisses on the strange letters. Carefully, I say, "Do you always tie women to your ship?"
"Only the pretty ones."
The tattooed girl rolls her eyes. "Prince Charming," she says. The prince laughs, and the sound of it makes me lick my lips. My mother wants him dead, but she wants me to do it as a human to prove my worth as future ruler of the sea. If I can just get close enough. "Untie me," I command.
"You should thank me before barking orders," says the prince. "After all, I saved you and clothed you."
I look down and realize that it's true. A large black shirt scratches my legs, the damp fabric sticking to my new body.
"Where did you come from?"
the prince asks. "Did someone throw you overboard while you were getting undressed?" asks the girl.
"Maybe they threw her overboard because she was getting undressed," says the boy with the knife.
This is met with laughter from the rest of them.
"Forgive us," said the prince, "but it's not every day we find a naked girl drowning in the middle of the ocean, especially with no other ships in sight, especially one who slaps me after I save her."
"You deserved it."
"I was helping you."
"Exactly." The prince considers this, and then pulls a small circular contraption from his pocket. It looks like a compass of some sort, and when he speaks again, his eyes stay pinned to it, voice deceptively casual. "I can't quite place your accent," he says. "Where is it that you're from?"
An eerie sensation settles in my chest. I avert my eyes from the object, hating how it feels when I look at it, like it's staring straight back.
"Untie me," I say.
"What's your name?"
the prince asks.
"Untie me." "I see you don't know much Midasin,"
he shakes his head. "Tell me your name first." He switches his gaze from the compass to me, assessing, as I try to think of a lie. But it's hopeless, because I don't know any human names to lie with. I've never lingered enough to hear them, and unlike the mermaids who spy on humans whenever they can, I've never cared to learn more about my prey. With a fierce spit, I say, "Lyra." He glances down at the compass and smiles.
"Lyra," he repeats,
pocketing the small object. My name sounds melodic on his lips, less like the weapon it had been when I said it.
"I'm Elian," he says, though I didn't ask.
A prince is a prince, and his name is as inconsequential as his life.
I lean my free hand against the top of the railing and pull myself to my feet. My legs shake violently and then buckle beneath me. I slam onto the deck and let out a hiss of pain. Elian watches, and it's only after a short pause that he holds out a wary hand. Unable to bear him standing over me, I take it. His grip is strong enough to lift me back onto my unsteady feet. When I nearly topple again, his hand shoots to my elbow and holds me firmly in place. It's shock. He reaches for his knife and cuts the thread that binds me to the railing.
You'll be steady again in no time. Just take a breath.
I'd be steadier if I weren't on the ship. Elian raises an eyebrow.
You were a lot more charming when you were unconscious.
I narrow my eyes and press a hand to his chest to balance myself. I can feel the slow drum of his heart beneath my hand. And in moments, I'm taken back to Midas, when I had been so close to stealing it. Elian stiffens and slowly prizes my hand from his chest, placing it back on the railing. He reaches into the pocket of his trousers and lifts out a small rope necklace. The string is a shimmer of blue, glistening like water under the sun. It's liquid made into something other, too smooth to be ice and too solid to be ocean. It sparkles against the gold of Elian's skin, and when he opens his hand, he reveals the pendant that hangs from the bottom. Sharply curved edges stained with crab red. My lips part and I touch a hand to my neck, where my seashell once hung. Nothing. Furious, I leap toward Elian, my hands like claws. But my legs are too unsteady, and the attempt nearly sends me back to the floor.
Steady on there, damsel.
Elian grabs my elbow to hold me upright. I rip my arm from him and bare my teeth monstrously. Give it to me, I order. He tilts his head.
Why would I do that?
Because it's mine.
Is it?
He runs a thumb over the ridges of the seashell. As far as I know, this is a necklace for monsters, and you certainly don't look like one of those. I clench my fists. I want you to give it to me. I feel maddened by the Midasin on my tongue. Its smooth sounds are too quaint to display my anger. I itch to spit the knives of my own language at him. Tear him down with the skewers of Sarine, where each word can wound.
What's it worth? Asks Elian.
I glare. What do you mean?
Nothing's free in the ocean, he explains. What's the necklace worth to you?
Your life. He laughs, and beside him the large man lets out a good-natured chuckle. I'm unsure what's so funny, but before I can ask, Elian says,
I don't imagine my life is worth much to you at all.
He is so very wrong about that. Mine, then, I say. And I mean it, because that necklace is the key to finding my way home. Or at the very least, calling for help. If it can't lead me back to my kingdom as a human, then it can at least summon Kalia. She can speak to the Sea Queen on my behalf and beg her to rescind the punishment so I won't have to.
Your life, Elian repeats.
He takes a few steps toward me.
Careful who you tell that to. A worse man might hold you to it.
I push him away. And you're a better man?
I like to think so.
He holds the seashell up to the sunlight, blood against sky. I can see the curiosity in his eyes as he wonders what a castaway is doing with such a trinket. I ponder if he knows what it's even for, or if it's just something he has seen on the necks of his murdered sirens. Please, I say, and Elian's eyes dart back to me. I've never used that word in any language. And even though Elian can't possibly know that, he looks unsettled. There's a crack in the bravado,
After all, I'm a half-naked girl being held prisoner and he's a human prince. Royal by birth and destined to lead an empire. Chivalry is in his veins, and all I need to do is remind him of it. Would you like me to beg you? I ask, and Elian's jaw tightens. If you just tell me why you have it, then I'll give it back. He sounds sincere, but I know better. Pirates are liars by trade, and royals are liars by blood. I know that firsthand. My mother gave it to me, I say. A gift? Elian ponders this.
Passed through your family from how far back? Do you know what it does or how it works?
I grind my teeth. I should have known his questions wouldn't end until he ripped the truth from me. I would give it to him gladly on any other day, but I'm defenseless on this ship without the music of my voice to sing him into submission. I can barely even stand on my own. The seashell is my last hope, and he's keeping it from me. I lunge for it once more. I'm quick, even as a human, and my fingers close around his fist in an instant. But Elian is faster somehow, and as soon as my hand locks onto his, Elian's knife is on my neck.
Really?
He presses his blade firmly against my throat, and I feel a small slash of pain.
That wasn't so smart.
I tighten my hand around his fist, unwilling to let go. The cut on my neck stings, but I have felt and caused far worse. His face is roguish when I sneer up at him, nothing like the sweet and gentle princes I've taken before. The ones whose hearts are buried beneath my bed. Elian is as much a soldier as I am.
Captain?
A man emerges from the lower deck, his eyes wide.
The radar spotted one!
Quickly, Elian looks to the knife-wielding boy.
Kai,
he says. Just a name, just a word, and yet the boy nods abruptly and jumps the length of the stairs to the decks below. In an instant, Elian tears his blade from my throat and sheathes it.
Get in position,
he yells. He loops my seashell around his neck and runs for the edge of the ship.
What are you doing?
I ask. Elian turns to me, a glint of mischief in his eyes.
It's your lucky day, Lyra, he says. You're about to meet your first siren.
16. Lyra. I watch the humans jumping from one end of the boat to another, pulling on ropes and yelling words and names I don't quite understand. At one point, the boy with the knife, Kai, trips and slices his palm. Quickly, the tattooed girl rips the bandana from her head and throws it to him, before running to the wheel and lurching it left. The ship twists too quickly for me to stay steady, and I collapse to the floor again. I screech in frustration and search the decks for my captor. Prince Elian leans over the edge, one arm tangled in rope, the other holding the mysterious object up to the light.
Steady, he tells his crew. Hold her steady!
He whispers something to himself. A slew of Midasin that I can't make out, much less understand, and then smiles at the compass and screams,
Torek, now!
The large man leans his head into the lower decks and bellows at the crew. As soon as the boom of his voice shudders through my bones, a high-pitched whistle tears through the air. I bring my hands to my ears. It's not so much a noise as it is a blade carving through my skull, a sound so shrill I feel like my eardrums could explode. Around me, the humans seem unaffected, and so with a grimace I lower my hands and try to hide my discomfort.
I'm going in!
Elian calls over his shoulder. He throws the compass to the girl.
Madrid, lower the net on my signal.
She nods as he pulls a small tube from his belt and places it into his mouth. Then he's gone. He meets the water with barely a noise, so quiet that I stumble to the edge of the ship to make sure that he actually jumped. Sure enough, ripples pool on the surface, and the prince is nowhere to be seen.
What is he doing? I ask.
Playing the part, Madrid replies.
What part?
She pulls a small crossbow from her belt and fixes an arrow in the latch.
Bait. He's a prince, I observe. He can't be bait.
He's a prince, she says, so he gets to decide who's bait.
Kai hands her a back quiver filled with arrows and cuts me a guarded glance.
If you're so concerned, we can always throw you over instead.
I ignore both the comment and the hostile look in his eyes. Human pettiness knows no bounds. Surely he can't breathe for long, I say.
5 minutes of air, Madrid tells me. It's what the tube's for. Nifty little thing the captain picked up a while back on Efevreshi.
Efevreshi. The land of invention. It's one of the few kingdoms I've been careful to steer clear of, made cautious by the machinery that patrols their waters. Nets made from lightning, and drones that swim faster than any mermaid. Ships more like beasts, with a knowledge and intelligence of their own.
When the captain comes back up, you'll get to see something wonderful,
Kai tells me. Monsters, says Madrid, are not wonderful.
Watching them die is pretty wonderful.
Kai looks pointedly in my direction.
That's what happens to our enemies, you see.
Madrid scoffs. Keep watch for the captain's signal, she says.
He told you to do that.
She smiles. And technically, darling, I outrank you.
Kai scratches his face with his middle finger, which is apparently not a flattering gesture because a moment later Madrid's jaw drops and she swipes to hit his shoulder. Kai weaves effortlessly out of the way and then grabs her hand midair, pulling her toward him. When Madrid opens her mouth to say something, he presses his lips to hers and snatches a kiss. Like a thief stealing a moment. I half expect her to shoot him with the crossbow. I know I would. But when he breaks away, she only shoves him half-heartedly. Her smile is ruthless. I turn from them and clutch the ship ledge for support. The sun boils down on my bare legs and the wind hums softly by my ear. The shrill ringing has mellowed to a faint echo around me, making everything seem too quiet, too peaceful. Under the sea, it's never so serene. There's always screaming and crashing and tearing. There's always the ocean, constantly moving and evolving into something new. Never still, and never the same. On land, on this ship, everything is far too steady.
Ignore Kai, says Madrid.
She stands beside me. He's always like that.
Like what?
Ridiculous, she says, then turns to him.
If the sonar cuts again, go below decks and give that engineer a piece of your knife.
The sonar? I ask.
It's that ringing, she explains. Doesn't bother us much, but the sirens go mad on it. Hits their nerves and disables them.
Kai plucks the dirt from under his thumbnail with a knife.
It stops them from singing their little song and drowning us all.
I grit my teeth. Typical humans, using their dirty tricks of technology to fight their wars for them. I've never heard of something that can take away a siren's power. But experiencing the awful tearing in my skull makes it easy to believe. I wonder how excruciating it would be to hear it in my siren form. If it would be akin to my mother's magic.
I know we look pretty run down, Madrid says. The crew's normally a lot bigger, but we're on a bit of a special case. Captain cut us in half for his latest whim.
I eye her strangely. I didn't ask you about your crew. She laughs and pushes a curl from her face. Without the bandana, her hair is riotous.
I figured you'd have questions, she says.
Not everyone wakes up to find themselves on the infamous siren ship in the company of the Golden Prince. No doubt you've heard the best and worst about us. I just want you to know that only half the stories are true.
She grins at this last part, smiling as though we're old allies, as though she has a reason to feel comfortable around me.
You can't be aboard our ship and not know the ins and outs, Madrid says.
Kai makes a contemptuous noise.
I don't think Cap wants strangers knowing the ins of any of our outs.
And what if she becomes part of the crew?
If wearing the captain's shirt made someone part of the crew, then half of the girls in Idilio would be sailing with us.
Good, Madrid says. We need some more female blood.
We get enough of that spilled on the deck from sirens.
Sea foam doesn't count,
she snipes, and the disdainful look Kai had when talking about me disappears in place of an impish grin.
You like making up the rules as you go along, don't you, love?
Madrid shrugs and turns back to me, inked arms spread open like wings.
Welcome to the Saad, Lyra, she says.
And then Elian erupts from the ocean. To my instant relief, the sonar dissipates, and though it leaves a ringing in my ears, the pain subsides instantaneously. Kai's lips draw a smile, and at the same time, Elian draws a breath, sending the ship into a frenzy. From the water, a net claws its way to the surface, turning the ocean to mighty waves. Inside, a creature thrashes and hisses, her tangled fin the only thing keeping her from the prince and his heart. Elian sits on the other side, knife in hand, and watches the siren. She scratches at him. But the net is wide, and they're separated by at least 3 feet. Still, Elian looks on guard, one hand gripped in the net to keep himself steady, and the other clasping his knife.
If you've got a minute, Elian calls up to the ship. I wouldn't mind coming aboard.
Get moving,
Torek bellows to the rest of the crew.
I want that damn net up here 5 minutes ago.
Kai rushes to his side and twists the rope that is hoisting the net up to them. He leans back so his entire body is balanced against it. He is breathless with the weight in moments. Below, the siren screeches so venomously that I can barely make out the sarine on her tongue. She's bleeding, though I can't see from where. The red seems to cover so much of her, like paint against her skin. As the net is drawn back to the ship, she continues to thrash wildly and the whistle sounds again. I clench my hands by my sides to keep from bringing them to my ears. The siren is maddened. Her hands fly to her face and she tears her nails through her cheeks, trying to rip the noise out. Her screams are like death itself, a sound that makes my newly formed toes curl against the ship. Kai pulls the rope harder, his arms dripping with sweat. When the net finally reaches the top, he hands the rope over to another crew member and then rushes to his prince's side. Within moments, the net is untangled, and Elian is pulled free. Kai and Madrid clasp his elbows and drag him out of harm's way. As they do, I see that his arms are cut. Slashes so similar to the day the mermaid tried to steal his heart from me. Quickly, Kai tears his sleeve and grabs Elian's hand. It's punctured with deep, dark holes. The blood is black red, and nothing at all like the gold I've heard. The sight of it gives me pause.
Are you mad? Kai yells.
He uses his shirt as a makeshift bandage.
I can't believe you got into that thing.
It was the only way. Elian shakes his hand as though shaking off the injury.
She wouldn't be lured.
You could have nicked an artery, Madrid says.
Don't think we'd waste good stitches on you if you were going to bleed to death anyhow.
Elian smirks at her insubordination. Everything is a game to him. Loyalty is mockery, and devotion is kinship in place of fear. He's a riddle, disguised as a ruler, able to laugh at the idea of disloyalty as though it would never be an option. I can't fathom such a thing.
If you're gonna keep this up, Kai says, we should invest in some safer nets.
I look to the net in question and almost smile. It's a web of wire and glass. Shards weave into one another so that their twisted metal can make a nimble cage. It's monstrous and glorious. Inside, the siren wails.
"She's clever," says Elian, coming to my side. "Normally the noise confuses them so much that I stand by the net and they fly in. She wouldn't have it, though. Wouldn't go in unless I did."
The crew gathers with their weapons at the ready. "She was trying to outsmart you," I say. And Elian grins.
"She can try to be smarter, but she'll never be quicker."
I scoff at his arrogance and turn to the creature he has caught in his web. I'm almost eager to see the siren stupid enough to fall for such a trap. But at the sight of her face, an unfamiliar feeling settles into my stomach. I know her. A sleek charcoal fin that smudges across the deck. Cold black hair stringing over her cheeks and nails carved to shanks. She snarls, baring her fangs and slapping her fin violently against the wire. In the background, the whistle hums. And whenever I think she might sing, she whimpers instead. I take a step closer, and she narrows her eyes. One brown, the other a mix of blue and blood, curdled by a scar that stretches to her lip. "Maeve."
"Be careful," Elian says, his hand hovering by my arm. "They're deadly."
I turn to him, but he's looking at the siren, seaweed eyes sharper than her nails.
"Idiastico guruni,"
Maeve growls. "Disgusting pig." Her words are a mirror of the ones I spoke when Elian saved me from drowning. "Be calm," I tell her, then grimace when I realize I'm still speaking Maedasin. When the siren's eyes meet mine, they're full of the same hatred we've always shared for each other. It almost makes me laugh to think that even as strangers, our animosity can be so ripe, stretching beyond the bounds of knowing. Maeve spits on the deck.
"Filthy human whore," she says in Saurine.
Instinctively, I lurch forward, but Elian yanks me back by the waist. I kick violently against him, desperate to get at the defiant girl in front of me. Siren or not, I won't let the insult stand.
"Stop." Elian's voice is muffled by my hair. "If you want to get yourself killed, one of us can do the job a lot tidier."
"Let her go," Kai laughs. "I want to see how that ends." I writhe against Elian, scratching at his arms like the animal I am.
"After what she just called me," I say, "it's going to end with her heart on the floor."
Maeve cackles and uses her finger to draw a saurine circle on her palm. When my eyes widen at the insult, she only laughs more. It's a symbol reserved for the lowest beings. For mermaids that lie dying as their fins are stapled into the sand in punishment. For humans unworthy of a siren's presence. To make that gesture to the royal bloodline is punishable by death.
"Kill her,"
I seethe.
"Ashimi ligo skyla. Human scum,"
Maeve screeches in return. Elian's breath is hot on my neck as he struggles to keep a hold of me.
"What did you say?"
"Filthy little bitch," I translate in Maedasin. "Thasas kotoso tonaefto mo."
"I'll kill you myself." I'm about to break free, but the second Elian releases his grip on my waist, his hands clamp down on my shoulders. He twists me around and I'm thrown against the door of the lower deck. When he leans over me, the scent of black sweets is fragrant on his breath. I dismiss him and make to move past, but he's too quick even for me and blocks my path, pushing me back against the varnished wood. Slowly, he brings a hand to the paneling beside my head, closing me in.
"You speak Saurine."
His voice is throaty, his eyes as dark as the blood that seeps from his hand. Behind him, the crew keeps a watchful eye on Maeve, but every moment or so they shoot surreptitious glances our way. In my madness, I forgot myself. Or perhaps I remembered myself. I spat my language like it was the most natural thing in the world. Which, to a human, it would never be. Elian is close enough that if I listened, I'd be able to hear his heartbeat. If I stilled, I'd be able to feel the thumps pulsing through the air between us. I look down to his chest, where the strings of his shirt have loosened to reveal a circle of nails. My parting gift.
Lyra, he says. You better have a damn good explanation.
I try to think of an answer. But out of the corner of my eye, I see Maeve still at the mention of my name. Suddenly, she's squinting at me, leaning forward so the net pierces through her arms. I hiss, and Maeve scrambles back.
Principessa,
she says. Princess. She shakes her head. She was ready to die at the hands of pirates. But now that she stares into the eyes of her princess, fear finally dawns on her face.
You understand her, says Elian.
I understand many things. I push him away, and he gestures for his crew to let me approach their prisoner.
Paracalo!
Maeve screams as I near.
Paracalo!
What's she saying? Asks Madrid. She points her weapon at Maeve, as all of the crew does. Swords and bullets to hide behind, because humans don't possess the innate strength to defend themselves. Only unlike the others, Madrid's gun is not so much a gun at all. Somewhere along the way, she discarded the crossbow in place of something far more deadly. Gold-polished metal gleams in the shape of a rifle, but a long black spear rests below the sight, the tip dipped in the purest silver. Yet despite having such an elaborate weapon, Madrid doesn't look eager to attack. She looks as though she would rather keep her hands clean of murder. I turn back to Maeve and watch the fear settle into her eyes. There's never been anything close to tolerance between us, but it was only recently we began to consider ourselves enemies. Or, rather, Maeve began to consider me an enemy, and I enjoyed the compliment. I take in her muddled eye, rippled by blood and shadowed by scars. I blinded her, not so long ago, with the blunt end of a coral piece. Now, whenever she blinks, her right eye stays open. Thinking back, I can't remember why I did it. Maeve said something, perhaps. Did something that I disliked enough to punish her. Really, she could have done anything and it wouldn't have mattered because most of all I just wanted to hurt her. For whatever reason and no reason. I wanted to hear her scream. It is like that in the sea. Brutal and unrelenting, filled with endless cruelty that has no recompense. There was a time when I wanted nothing more than to kill Maeve, but feared my mother's wrath too much to act. Now the opportunity is here. Perhaps not to do it myself, but to watch as someone else does. The enemy of my enemy.
Tell us what she's saying,
Kai demands. She's not saying anything. I stare at Maeve. She's begging.
Begging.
Elian is beside me, an unreadable expression on his face as he repeats my words. He clasps the knife in his wounded hand, and when his blood drips down the blade, it disappears. Metal drinking metal. I can feel the sorcery roll from it like thunder, the whispers of a weapon begging him to spill more blood so it can get its fill. It's soaked in enough magic to sing like one of my melodies. But Elian doesn't succumb to its refrain. His expression is hesitant. And it's been a long time since I've seen such a thing in the eyes of a killer. Yet Elian stares down at Maeve, as though the thought of her pleading makes the whole thing wrong, dirty.
She's begging, he says. Are you sure?
Paracalo,
I repeat. It means please.
17. Elian. I've never killed a begging thing. As the siren cowers on my deck, I'm perfectly aware that she is a monster. She's whimpering, but even the sound is wicked, a mix of hisses and throaty laments. I'm not sure why she's so scared when moments ago a net made of glass and spikes barely made her wince. Part of me wants to feel proud that my reputation has finally preceded me. The other part, perhaps the smarter part, is sure that I have nothing to be proud of. I gaze over at Lyra. Her graveyard dirt hair clings to her shoulders as she sways with the motion of my ship. There's something about her slight frame that makes her look menacing, as though every angle is a weapon. She barely blinks at the siren, who is now disfigured with gashes. As I stare at her, I see nothing of the wraith-like girl I pulled from the ocean. Whatever spell had threatened to transfix me when I saved her is broken now, and I can see quite clearly that she's no helpless damsel. She's something more, and it makes me too curious for my own good. The Sarin she spoke lingers in the air, a language forbidden in most kingdoms, including my own. I want to know how she learned it. When she got close enough, why she kept one of their necklaces noosed like a trophy around her neck. I want to know everything.
Will you kill her?
Lyra asks. There's no more sweet pretense as she tries to speak my language. I'm not sure where she's from, but whatever kingdom it is clearly has no love for mine. Yes.
Will it be quick?
Yes. She scoffs.
Shame.
The siren whimpers again, and repeats a slew of sarin. It's so quick and guttural that I barely make out the words. Still, one of them sticks in my mind clearer than the others.
Bringipasa.
Whatever it means, she says it with fear and reverence. A combination I'm rarely used to seeing. In my kingdom, those who revere me don't know me well enough to fear me. And those who fear me know me far too well to do something as unwise as adore me.
Your knife,
Lyra says. My hand forms a fist around the handle. My wound drips and I feel the blade quickly soak it up. No blood gone to waste.
It has a strange magic.
I look at her pointedly. I don't think you're in a position to say what's strange. Lyra doesn't reply, and in her silence, Kai steps forward.
Cap, he says. Be careful.
She can't be trusted. At first, I think he's talking about the monster on our deck, and I'm about to tell him that I'm not an idiot when I realize the siren isn't the one Kai's looking at. Lyra is in his sights. If there's one thing in the world Kai has never had, it's tact. But Lyra doesn't pay attention to the accusation. She doesn't even glance in his direction, like the allegation is nothing more than ocean water dripping off her. I'll deal with her, I tell Kai, when I'm ready.
Maybe you should be ready now.
I tap the tip of my knife against my finger and step forward, but Kai grabs my arm. I look down at his hands gripping the fabric of my shirt. Kai's greatest strength is that he's as suspicious as I am reckless. He doesn't like surprises and takes every possible threat as a threat on my life. Every warning is a promise. But with him to do it for me, there's no need for me to waste time worrying. Besides, spending my life on the ocean has taught me to see what others can't and to expect what they won't. I know better than to trust a stranger on a pirate ship. But relying on instinct is far better than relying on doubt.
Didn't you hear what I just said?
He asks. Carefully, I take Kai's hand from my arm. I can assure you, there's nothing wrong with my hearing.
Just your common sense, then,
Lyra says. I watch her swipe the hair from her face. How's that? I ask.
If you had any, then you would have killed her by now, Lyra points to the siren. Her heart could be cold in your hands. Kai arches an eyebrow.
Damn, he says. What sort of ship did she get thrown off of?
Beside him, Madrid adjusts her stance, weapon never wavering as her feet shift. She's anxious, and I can feel it as much as I can see it. Madrid never wants to kill, whether it's monsters or men. In Clefdis, she killed enough to last a lifetime, and in some reverse twist of fate, it instilled her with more morals and scruples than before, neither of which have a place on the sod. But she is the best marksman I have, and if I ignore her principles, then it makes her one of my best chances at not dying. It's the sirens who take the hearts, Madrid tells Lyra. Not us. The knife gleams in my hand. I've taken plenty of hearts. I watch the siren getting as close as I can without slicing my boots on the net. I think of Christian, drowning in the ocean, the lie of a kiss on his mouth. For all I know, this could be the siren who did it. There was another one with the prince's bane. I've gathered that much from the tales that spread throughout my kingdom. Christian's murderer could be on my ship. The siren says something to Lyra, and I wonder if she's begging again. If Christian begged. Or if he was so far under the siren spell that he died willingly. Hold her down, I say. A spear shoots from Madrid's gun, piercing through the center of the siren's fin, pinning her to my ship. I resist the urge to look at Madrid, knowing the grim look of resignation she'll be wearing. As good a shot as she is, Madrid is an even better person. I kick pieces of netting away and crouch down beside the imprisoned creature. This part always makes me feel less human, as though the way I kill draws a moral boundary. I want you to tell me something, I say, and I'd appreciate your doing it in my language.
Podentha!
The siren writhes beneath the spear that staples her to the sod. It's dipped in silver thionite, which is deadly to their kind. Its slow poison coagulates at the entry point, stopping the wound from seeping onto my ship, and given enough time, stopping what scraps of a heart she might have. That's not Madassin, I tell her. I clasp my compass, eyeing the steady points of the face. What do you know about the Crystal of Quito? The siren's lips part, and she looks at Lyra, shaking her head.
Ego dentas es prodose.
Lyra, I say, I don't suppose you'd be kind enough to translate?
I've never been accused of kindness before.
Her voice is closer than I would like, and I shift when I see her shadow hovering next to mine. She's as quick as she is quiet, capable of sneaking up on even me. The thought is unsettling, but I push it to the back of my mind before I consider it too much. It's a dangerous thing to be distracted with a monster so close. Lyra crouches beside me. For a moment, she's quiet. Her storm blue eyes narrow at the spear in the center of the siren's fin. She's trying to decide something. It could be whether she's disgusted by our violence and if she should hide it. But I can't see any sign of repulsion. Then again, a mask is the easiest thing to slip on. There's nothing in my own eyes, despite the sick feeling creeping up in my stomach with the siren's screams. I push it away, as I do everything. A captain doesn't have the luxury of guilt. Lyra stands, and she's newly steady as she looks down at the dying creature.
Maybe it would be helpful, she says, if you take out her other eye.
I flinch, and a smile presses to the corner of Lyra's pale lips. I don't know if it's because the siren is so scared or if Lyra is simply pleased by the look on my face. If she said it just to see how I'd react, I'd be depriving her of your winning smile, I say.
Lyra cocks an eyebrow.
She's your enemy. Don't you want her in pain?
She looks at me as though I've lost all sense. My crew tends to look at me the same way, though not usually on the days when I refuse to torture. There are many things the world can say about the siren hunters of the Sod. But one thing that could never be true is that we enjoy this life. The ocean, yes, but never the death. It's a necessary evil to keep the world safe. And as dishonorable as killing is, it has a purpose. If I start to like it, then I become the very thing I'm trying to protect the world from. Soldiers don't enjoy war, I say. Lyra purses her lips. But just as she opens her mouth to say something, I'm thrown onto my back. My head cracks against the floor, and pain explodes in my temples. The siren is on top of me. She scratches and bites, making an ungodly howl. I dodge her attacks as she tries desperately to take a chunk out of me. Her fin is a mess of clotted blood, ripped straight down the middle. She must have torn herself free.
I can't get a clear shot, someone says. I'm gonna hit him.
Me either. Madrid, Kai yells. Madrid, shoot it now.
I can't.
I hear the sound of a gun being thrown to the floor.
Damn thing is wedged again.
I struggle beneath the venomous creature. Her face is fangs and hate and nothing else. She is hungry for part of me. Heart or not, she'll take whatever piece she can. The weight of her presses down, crushing my ribs. There's a crack, and then I can barely breathe through the pain. Around me, my crew shouts so loudly that it's almost incomprehensible. As their voices turn to noise, my arms burn with aching. The siren is too strong. Stronger than me by far. Then, just as suddenly as it came, the heaviness disappears. My breath rushes back. Kai grips her devil shoulders and rips the siren from me. She skitters and slides across the deck before colliding furiously with the cabin wall. My crew jumps out of the way to let her body skim past them. The sound of her impact shakes the sod. The siren digs her fingernails into the deck, shoulders arched. She hisses and lurches forward. Quickly, I grab my knife. I ignore the furious pain in my ribs as I let the featherlight blade take aim in my hand and then hurl it through the air. It glides into what is left of her heart. Most of the blood blisters onto her skin, but the remnants that threaten to spill onto my deck are quickly drunk up by my knife. The siren screams. As Kai pulls me to my feet, I catch a discreet breath, not daring to show that I was surprised. Even if it's obvious. It's my job to expect the unexpected, and I was stupid enough to turn my back on a killer. Are you all right? Kai asks, searching for wounds. He glares at the blood on my arm. I should have been faster. The look on his face rips through me as much as the siren did. And so I roll my shoulder, careful not to wince as the pain in my ribs intensifies with each moment. All in a day's work, I say, and turn to Madrid.
Your gun jammed again?
Madrid picks up her discarded weapon and studies the spear mechanism.
I don't get it, she says. I'll have to bring it below decks for another service.
She starts to walk to the other side of the deck, and then abruptly stops. When she notices the siren's body blocking the doorway. Madrid swallows and waits patiently. They all do. Perfectly silent until the moment the siren begins to fade. The sight is never anything less than a wonder to them, even after all this time. But I don't look at the lifeless creature turning to foam on my deck. I've seen 100 monsters die. Instead, I turn to the strange girl I pulled from the ocean. Lyra isn't smiling anymore.
18. Lyra.
Maeve dissolves into nothing.